All right. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to a February 10th edition of the Ag Market Network. I'm Pat McClatchy. I want to thank, first off, our major sponsor, Bayer Crop Science, for supporting us and making our program possible. We have a very special broadcast today. Dr. O.A. Cleveland will be leading us off today in our discussion, and he'll be joined by our special guest, Ed Jernigan. Ed has joined us before. He always does an excellent job. He is a very well-known global cotton market expert. He is managing director of Alianca Comercio. But we'll start off first with OA. OA, lead us into this, and then you can introduce Ed.
Okay, thank you very much, Pat. I appreciate this. I'm very excited that Ed joined us this morning. But let us supply demand report yesterday. In many ways, it came in as some were expected. But after I looked at the numbers, I said the market's this is a limit bound market, and certainly we didn't do that. But the market worked us over pretty well. USDA basically raised world stocks nearly 2 million bales. They raised U.S. stocks a 500,000 bales up to 3.6 million bales. They raised world consumption, reduced world consumption about 1.3 million bales and reduced U.S. exports some 500,000 bales. Those were the big changes, at least to me. We can come up with some big numbers representing some changes in other countries that are very, very important. But given those kinds of numbers, actually just a triple digit down, I would say the market performed fairly well. I'm going to skip many of the comments I would usually make, and I hope my cohorts would come back and pick that up as we move through here. But Pat, you mentioned it. I asked Ed Jernigan to join us today. I think the market is so dynamic and potentially so volatile right now that we need to get a very hard discussion, not so much on supply and demand, but on what's going on in China. And the backdrop in all of this, as it keeps running through my mind anyway, is the old guy, James Carville, three or four elections ago when Bill Clinton was running. Carville was famous for saying, "It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid." Well, it's demand, stupid. It's demand. What in the world has happened with cotton demand? It's the demand, stupid. But in that backdrop, we have China hanging out there. We have those stocks. And it appears that those stocks are getting ready to be dumped on the market. And that's what's in control, or has been in control for the last 2 to 3 weeks. And I think probably this looking at the grains, the cycle in grain production, grain carryover, I think it's telling us now that this cycle has come completely back around, and we're looking at grain stocks just as large as they were 7 or 8 years ago. And it presents a great question as to whether or not cotton production will be up this year or down. But now, in all that backdrop, Ed, how about taking over and telling us about the way you read this market, and with some particular emphasis on the Chinese situation and all the stocks and what it's doing, basically just wearing out prices. Ed Jernigan, again, Pat mentioned, President CEO of Alianca, the large grain and cotton trading firm, international group, headquartered in Brazil, but Ed works out of Nashville per se, and we've known him forever as just about the premier cotton analyst around. Ed, thank you. Come ahead.
All right. Well, thank you, OA and Pat. I told OA I'd speak this morning because I feel like the growers around the world are really being under some severe pressure related to China and WTO and a host of issues that need to be brought up. So we work a lot with growers, and so I thought that was something that was important. So I'm going to start and focus most of my discussion on China, then I'll wrap it up with a little illustration of what happened to cotton demand and how that has been replicated across several markets, and then I'm open to any questions. But, you know, the market, the cotton market seemed to take a dramatic turn here several weeks ago. That in this turn, I think, is related to mostly related to China. And so, you know, China is on holiday this week. This is the Chinese New Year. This is the year of the fire monkey. And so, a little bit of humor out of this, but, I mean, there's one thing, you know, I'm not a big believer in the Chinese zodiac calendar, but just I'll give you this bit of history. The year of the fire monkey is a very rare thing in the Chinese zodiac calendar, and the last one occurred 60 years ago. And 60 years ago, it occurred during the reign of Mao Zedong. And Mao Zedong made a famous statement during that period of time, basically where he encouraged the liberals to come out, and he said they were going to enjoy a time of some freedom, and then changed his mind very abruptly, shortly, and cracked down. And later he was said to be the famous statement, he enticed the snakes out of the cave. So that year is remembered in China as a year of great volatility. And so now we project ourselves back 60 years from that date. We've got another one of the year of the fire monkey here. And China is now the second largest economy in the world. And it's what happens in China is felt around the world. So if we go back several years and talk about, you know, China's negotiations to join the WTO took 15 years to finalize, with China finally joining in December 2001. And it's been a member now for 15 years. And during the period of time when the negotiations were going on, one of the biggest discussions was China's fear about the damages that opening the economy would do to its farmers. Well, today, many of China's trade partners, such as the U.S., have been the ones that have seen the industrial base move to China, and it's the Chinese farmers have enjoyed the highest agricultural subsidies in the world. So China, as we all know, has developed the largest textile and apparel industry in the world, and it's the world's largest exporter of these products, inundating every economy in the world. You can go on Alibaba from any part of the world and order a direct product from China. Now, the situation in the cotton has its roots, and I'm going to just recap some of these briefly where we all know how this mess happened. In 2011, the National Development Reform Commission made the decision that's now being felt around the world, and this is the group that oversees the reserve, it and the Ministry of Finance traditionally. During the 2009-10 surge in cotton prices, basically the reserve came in and sold their stocks and ran out of stocks. They had nothing to no way to address the market as it went to the, you know, over 200 cents a pound. And so one can imagine only what went on in the discussions among the central planners when they had nothing that they could do. So they resolved, I believe, having dealt with them for years, basically never let that happen again. And that thought process is leading to the problems. So as the market began to come back down, prices got back all the way back down to nearby futures to about 100 cents. China's domestic farmers began to raise cane. They wanted some support to cotton prices because China has the highest cotton production prices in the world. They moved back into the market and began to buy for the reserve. And they bought both imported cotton and domestic cotton. And they bought the domestic cotton at around 142 cents a pound. Now, that started the program that went on for 2012 and 2013. And they actually raised the procurement price to about $1.46 a pound. And it ended up resulting that they bought, you know, 93% of the 2012 crop, domestic crop, and about the same volume or a little bit more of the 2014 crop. And then next thing we know, by August of 2014, the reserve had accumulated about 11.2 million tons. Multiply that by the 4.5945, and you got six out of every 10 bales in the world in China. So then in 2015, that's where this issue that we're dealing with today really started. The NDRC and the Ministry of Finance announced a major change to import duties, which ended the ability of the mills to import cotton under the sliding scale import quota, and they limited cotton imports. So, and ended the liberal issuance of processing quotas. So as we entered that led to the conditions we had last year and the record yarn imports. And then we entered in 2016, we began these series of closed doors meetings that involved key players in China regarding what they're going to do with the situation with the reserves now. This unusual lack of usual in China, the lack of transparency in the discussions make true analysis difficult. However, there are some detailed rumors we can talk about. During the last 5 years, the reserve has had a pattern of holding its auctions from February after the Chinese New Year or April, starting them, and then continuing through July, August. This year's debate takes place at when the auctions will begin. Will it be shortly in February or wait to April, and then secondly, what the floor price will be. Since early December, when the discussions about the possible reserve strategy began, domestic mills have slowed their purchases of the 2015 crop, and they're waiting for what the reserve is going to do. The rumors suggest that the reserve could announce a additional purchases back for the reserve of the 700,000 to 800,000 tons of unsold Xinjiang crop. In addition to that, auction about 2 million metric tons of stocks for sale into the market. And now, what is the price? The price is rumored to be linked, you know, during these meetings, the domestic mill lobby seems to have been successful in getting the reserve to consider linking the price to the market for the first time. And the price is going to be some combination of the China Cotton Index, which is a cash index of the Chinese domestic prices, and the Cotton Look A Index, and then there'd be a discount for the cotton based on how long it's been stored, does it have to be regraded, and so forth. Now, during the previous reserve auctions, the CNC, the China National Reserve Corp, went to great lengths to assure that the mills could only buy quantities linked to the actual consumption levels. They audited the mills and then went to even greater lengths to prevent trading firms from retaining these stocks. Now, with stocks over 5 years old, storage costs continue to build, and quality deteriorating, will all these controls be dropped, and will cotton be allowed to be auctioned? Now, a little bit of a reference point is any subsidies on any of this cotton coming out of the reserve is going to equal 54 to 58 cents a pound before quality loss is considered. We estimate quality losses would be anywhere from 6.9 to 10.3 cents a pound. And then you have storage and interest costs. Now, the ICAC estimated that Chinese growers received 58 cents a pound subsidy in 2014-15. The rules under which agricultural subsidies are managed under the WTO are one of the most complex formulas in existence. It deals with three areas: domestic support, market access, and export subsidy. Up until now, the China's record cotton subsidies did not result in any WTO action. The reason being that until 2015, the reserve's impact on the world market was limited, and China remained the largest importer by a wide margin. So as the largest customer of U.S., Brazilian, Australian, West African, Indian cotton, no exporting country had any motivation to challenge these subsidies. Well, in 2015, everything changed. So that brings us to the events of the last week. Last week, before the China went on the holiday, some events began to happen in the domestic market that leads to why the futures is under so much pressure. On the ICE futures collapsed last Thursday, February the 4th, with the March contract breaking the 60 cents. This collapse was driven by the continued pressure on China's forward markets. China has two major forward markets, and these markets are for real, and they trade large volumes. There's a China National Cotton Exchange e-forward market, which is kind of a cross between the cash market and the futures market, and it was the first. And then there is the, I refer to it as the ZCE cotton futures. And these are sophisticated markets. The people who run them are well-trained, and so do not ever write these off as something other than real. They are real, and real money is taking place, so you got to pay attention to what they do. So last Friday, when the markets closed for the Chinese New Year, the September ZCE cotton futures fell to a record low of 10,556 RMB a ton, or 73 U.S. cents a pound, including VAT, and they have a VAT tax on all the prices. So this represented the lowest level of ZCE futures since 2008. It also reflected at a discount to the Cotluk A index after adjusted for the VAT tax. When you did this, the A index stood at 76 cents last Friday. So China was below the market 3 cents. This convergence of Chinese domestic forward prices and international prices has now occurred for the first time since the price surge of 2010-11. And we are referring to this as the day of reckoning. Now, a day of reckoning is kind of a term that goes around the markets, but it refers to an event when past mistakes or misdeeds must be punished or paid for. Well, it's here, and now what happens? Chinese domestic agricultural subsidies, OA mentioned it when he started talking about, you know, the grain prices and the structure. One of the reasons why the world market's having some of its problems is the Chinese domestic agricultural subsidies, and they're not being talked about. But just for some reference, here are some reference numbers for you. Chinese domestic agricultural subsidies, since 2001, it's estimated that between 2001 and 2010, subsidies increased an average of 23.7% a year. Additional data showed that they surged again from 2010 to 2012. The OECD reported that China's agricultural subsidies as a percent of GDP moved from 1.4% in 95-97 to 2.3% in 2010-12. What makes this big is China's GDP in 95 was $728 billion, and in 2012 was $8.3 trillion. So a lot of money. These agricultural subsidies were one of the major methods used to try to attempt to lift the rural sector out of poverty. And they launched the most aggressive agricultural subsidy program ever attempted. One part of the subsidy scheme and a key component of Chinese capitalism has been the use of the state reserve agencies, which purchase commodities when the price are below the support price, sell it when they rally, and reduce market volatility. The reserve has used these control price fluctuations to allow the domestic industry to take advantage of sharp declines in global commodity prices major imported commodities and aid the industry. In many instances, the state reserve acted as a large trading company. This feature of Chinese capitalism has lots of success stories, however, in the agricultural reserve programs, they tell another story, which huge costs to the national treasury, build up of large stockpiles of commodities, not meant to be stored for long periods, massive waste and spoilage, and market participants taking advantage of how they sell to them in price and policies. Now, what all this has done is, I didn't do it on yesterday's USDA report, but on the previous USDA report, interesting thing when you go back and look, China holds today almost 38% of the global wheat stocks. They hold over 54% of the global corn stocks. They hold over 53% of the global rice stocks, and they hold over 62% of the global cotton stocks. So it doesn't take long to see these massive stocks are a burden to the entire global market and have impacted prices for every grower in the world of these commodities. Now, China has recognized the issues and problems with many of these subsidy schemes and their costs, and they begin to replace them with target price schemes, as they did in cotton in 2014. They've done it with some other ones. And they just announced they're going to end the support in corn the same way. But the state reserve schemes still play a major role until these stocks are gone. Now, between the period of 2012 and 2014, China's domestic prices were at large premiums to the international market, and cotton imports at the full 40% duty and under the sliding scale occurred in volume. Then in 2014, China launched a target price scheme, and the difference between the China domestic and international values began to narrow throughout the year. Then in 2015, the government limited the cotton imports, and this left spinners with the option to import under the WTO quota or with a full 40% duty, which they did not do. In 2015, the domestic price began to be heavily influenced, however, by international values as the mills found a loophole. They could import yarns without quota. So in late 2015, after a series of meetings, it became apparent that the NDRC and the Ministry of Finance appeared willing to release reserve stocks if prices tied to the market. In 2015, the reserve auction failed to drive much interest at all as spinners refused to buy the low-quality cotton at excessive premiums to the international market. Instead, weavers and knitters turned to imported yarns that had no quota at much cheaper polyester yarns. China's textile and apparel industry is the largest in the world. It's the most integrated in the world, and many of the world's brands and retailers use them because it's one of the few places you go and you can get the design and get it, and they do it all. Early in the development of the Chinese domestic textile industry, we were active in China, had a joint venture, and one of the things that came back was the central government told the textile industry they had room to absorb any higher domestic cotton support price and they should do so for the national good. Well, they did that. But now, when the costs began to be pushed sharply higher, they weren't able to do it any longer. Now, the central policymakers appeared not to recognize this in 2015 when they mandated no more imports and attempted to force the use of the expensive poor quality stock. Now, with agricultural subsidy bills reaching records annually, its impact on rural incomes limited, and the new government attempted to move to market policies, the government agencies has quietly begun to allow domestic cotton prices to move to par with world values. Now, for anybody that follows anything that we discuss, it might be remembered that right before the Christmas holidays, there was some very unusual trading activity on the China National Cotton Exchange E4 trading platform, in which the normal volume on this exchange is about 15,000 tons a day. All of a sudden, in 1 week, ending December the 15th, they traded the equivalent of 2.2 million bales of cotton, or nearly 10% of the 2015 crop. This was followed by the next week, another round of volume, in which they traded about 1.35 million bales. Now, the story is that there's one seller of this cotton. Well, Now, that creates as much mystery as anything it solves, and there's only one or two companies in China that could do that, and one of them is the reserve, and the other one is the production and construction corps, Xinjiang. So that creates a mystery to start with, makes things suspicious. By the end of last week, China's domestic Ford markets had moved to a discount to international values, as I mentioned earlier, with the A index falling to 76 cents after VAT. This compared to the China Cotton Index, the spot price, of about 86.74. However, most years, if you went back and looked at China's Ford markets versus the spot markets, they were at a slight premium or only a minor discount. This year is totally different with big discounts. So the foreign markets are saying that China's prices are going to move to a discount to international prices. Well, when you look at the forward markets of the ZCE futures, as we mentioned earlier, they were, when China ended for holiday last week, at discounts to the international market. Such prices makes exports feasible for at least the threat of them. It also dramatically slowed down the import yarn market, which was at a standstill last week as the market attempted to understand the ramifications of this. Now, in addition to this, we have the worries over demand, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute. But however, with the reserve holding 6 out of every 10 bales now in warehouses in the world, and Chinese Ford prices at a discount to international values, the reserve policies are overshadowing a lot of things. As of today, no policymakers in any major cotton-producing region is discussing the WTO ramifications of the record cotton subsidies behind these stocks. This has been surprising given the ramifications on the cotton growers of Brazil, Australia, India, and other regions is far greater than the impact the U.S. Step 2 program ever was that triggered the landmark WTO case. The impact on the U.S. growers is perhaps the greatest, with no currency adjustment to offset the losses that cotton could offer in 2016 as December 2016 futures dropped below 60 cents yesterday. U.S. leadership does not at all appear to be up to date on the situation, and no comment has emerged regarding holding WTO negotiations to deal with this trade distortion. Actually, the USDA Secretary of Agriculture has deferred any decision to designate cotton as an oilseed, citing his lack of authority and no method to pay for it. He's also raised concern he has violated WTO, which seems quite ironic when you're talking no stand on the China record subsidies. Adding to this is the importance of China's record ag subsidies, is a landmark takeover of Syngenta by the China National Chemical Corporation. This company, $43 billion cash purchase, is going to dramatically change Chinese agriculture even further. And one of the most concerning things to us is the flat nature of the ICE futures curve is very troubling, in which the prices are low all the way throughout the next three seasons. And that brings us to today. Now, as we know, the market was under severe pressure yesterday. I did not take the great high too much to the USDA report so much. It was negative. The issue is that it focuses really on the USDA continues to try to figure what the consumption levels are in India, Pakistan, and China. On India, they follow the lead of the Cotton Association in India and the CAB, and I still think the USDA has the Indian crop overestimated by 1 million bales. So this is comes and goes. The problem we have is the China stocks overhanging the market, the threat of exports, whether they're real or not, they're going to disrupt yarn trade, and secondly, demand. Now, everyone has talked about demand a lot, and I think that I want to bring just to give you a highlight of something. I think, first of all, the drop in polyester, the oil prices and their impact on polyester is added to the negativity, but however, in reality, that's not the problem. Cotton's demand is not a problem of price. It's a problem of consumer preference, and it's also a problem with the damage done to consumer spending across a large block of the developing world over the last 12 months. Now, as OA mentioned, we operate a lot in Brazil. We also operate in developing demand for some cotton products downstream, so we're very familiar with the Brazilian market. Brazil is a country of 200 million people compared to the U.S. being 300 million. Kind of keep that in the back of your mind for a minute. Over the last 8 to 10 months, this economy in Brazil has slipped because of a massive political scandal, the reduction in Chinese imports of all commodities and so forth. Brazil has slipped into a major depression, not recession, but depression. As such, cotton demand has collapsed. If we estimate that domestic consumption in Brazil is going to be down 20%. Now, that is an unbelievable number, but it is. Even with the World Cup and upcoming Olympics, is not sparking any cotton use because the event apparel that was produced at the World Cup and now for the Olympics has been dominated by man-made fibers as the focus focuses on performance apparel. The country also lacks an organization to promote and drive cotton use despite its importance. But that's an example of what's happening across the emerging markets, or the BRICS, as we all used to say. So in summing this up, I mean, the threat to the Chinese, a threat of Chinese cotton exports, or at least the threat of the loss in cotton yarn demand, has come at a very fragile time for the global price structure in cotton. The lack of any organized discussion and leadership in dealing with this disruption is causing the global trade market a lot of anxiety. Futures markets don't like certain, you know, large uncertainties hanging in the market shadows. It makes everyone risk averse, and Tuesday is a good example of that. So the problem remains that we will have to deal with this for several more seasons. If the pressure from these stocks continues, my question remains is how will U.S., Brazilian, and Australian growers grow cotton with four prices suggesting a loss for several seasons ahead? Given how these conditions change, in Australia, which has the highest yields in the world, they also have a currency that is falling to, you know, was basically 70 cents on the dollar. Their cash prices have dropped 30 Aussie dollars a bale over the last few weeks. The forward bids for 2007 had dropped 20 Aussie dollars a bale, and now crop no longer offers a profit. So, as OA mentioned earlier, from our standpoint, we question whether or not U.S. acreage is going to increase, and we question how some of these the other places outside of China are going to be able to grow cotton under the current price structure as we go forward. OA, that wraps up my prepared remarks. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you. Grateful comments. I know Kip, Pat, not trying to take your role here. Move us on forward, but I know Kip hadn't made any comments yet. And well, traditionally, we all have a few comments to say before we move into anything. Go ahead, Kip.
Well, I first of all, thank you very much. That was an excellent presentation. I learned a bit about China that I was a bit unaware of some of the price relationships that you talked about. I follow those reasonably close, but not as closely as I should, I guess, at times, because I was pretty much unaware of the kind of changes that were going on in December. I saw the volume go up, but unlike you, I was not able to put all the pieces together on that. I appreciate those comments. OA, I presume you're talking about when we generally just chat about the world supply-demand numbers. You've already covered that, quite frankly, as about as well as it needs to be. The other adjustments in that, of course, were the India, but it was demand side again, and that's something we talked about earlier, but the mill use dropped over a million bales in this, and I'm not so sure we're not going to see a bit more of a decline worldwide. I think that many people in the industries are underestimating the impact. I think it was alluded to, but the impact of the polyester on the cotton mill use, I think the price is a factor, apparently a little bit more maybe than was discussed earlier. I think it is a big deal. The marketing of man-made fibers has been phenomenal. We've talked about that excuse me, previously, but we're in a scenario where the price of cotton is important when it's relative to polyester. I think polyester prices are going to stay cheap for a long, long time, which, again, we've discussed this before. Cotton's going to have to come up with a strategy to either figure out a way to get people through marketing to desire cotton products a little bit more. The comments made about the world consumer being in a quote, bad place, I think that's appropriate because we are in a situation where you're not going to play a higher price for a, quote, luxury product, which in some areas cotton is being considered now relative to a performance product that oftentimes is, at least for the textile mill, a cheaper product, and they get a bigger bang for their buck. So I'm kind of saying the same things that have been said earlier in a slightly different way, but I'm not optimistic for cotton mill use for the next at least the next year, possibly a couple of years, unless we can figure out a way to better compete with these performance products.
John, what are your thoughts?
First of all, Ed, I appreciate that presentation, the level of detail and tying some things together. What I'm struck by, and it's already been said, is the problem with the drags on demand are problems that are longer term things to solve. They're going to be with us for a season or two or three. You know, I don't know when oil prices are and polyester is going to get more expensive, but it's going to be a while from now. And I don't know when the dollar is going to turn, and I don't know when economies are going to pick up around the world. And now we're talking about economies bleeding and going downhill. You mentioned Brazil. So, I mean, all of those things are things that are going to take a long time to fix. So, you know, my stump speech to growers this meeting season has been to point that out and say, you know, so in your markets, you know, what opportunities there have to push towards the higher end of the trading range are probably only going to come from, you know, production and supply surprises, shocks, you know, low planted acres and La Nina drought popping up in the summer, you know, whatever. And if that gives you some higher prices, you know, there's no demand support for it to last very long. And if it's revved up by speculative buying on headlines, none of that's going to last very long. So there's your market and there's your marketing plan. You know, if you see the higher end of the 60s, you better take it because everybody else is going to be hedging there too. So I'm struck by just, the implications for the timing and, you know, the short run nature or the longer run nature of the problem and the short run nature of any higher prices this season.
Well,
the other thing I really appreciate Ed talking about is this notion of the reserve auctions, because the press uses that term auction, but it never, you know, it seems like they're offering cotton for sale at $1.30 something and nobody buys it, and you know it's never been auctioned in that sense where they just say, hey, you know, what do you bid for this stuff, whatever quality it is? So that would be a change.
Well, just a little clarification on that. What they do, what they've done is, it has been an auction, but they had a floor price. In other words, they take the reference price of the Midland inch and 3/32, which is known as the type 328, and say it has a floor price of, 90 cents. And so most of the time, and then they have the discounts and premiums for quality and for age and all that. And the price just trades, one tenth of a cent above that or something like that. What's so different about the one rumored right now is, for the first time, they've set a floor price at each round of auctions, and that's what this time is the first time they've actually, and they're not told you what formula they've used and not told you anything, but this time they're talking about allowing the form. I don't know, you know, we won't know until they announce the exact details, but they're talking about the formula being a calculation such as, you know, the average, the rumored price right before, early last week, the rumored price was exactly the average between the China Cotton Index, Cash Cotton Index at the time, and Cotton Outlook A Index adjusted for that. It was exactly the average of those two, split in two, you know, divided by two. So this would be the first time they've ever done anything where the auction floor price is tied to the market price.
Yeah, okay.
Well, Ed, we have a lot of farmers that are listening to this, and I know they've got questions. And one of the questions would be, what in the world do they do? I mean, how do they justify growing cotton at these levels and potentially what the levels could be? What would you say to farmers out there about that?
Well, the reason why I came over here is my concern about nobody, you know, in the USDA or wherever it might be, having their moment, you know. I got angry over it a little bit because I feel like that the growers around the world are the ones taking it in the chin on this. And so I think personally, you know, every grower in the, you know, in the major machine pick markets of Australia, Brazil, and U.S. all face the same question. I mean, if you do the sums in every region, now Australia is a little bit different because they have the highest yields in the world, and they can sometimes make it really work at the low, you know, and exchange rates help. Brazilians, very much the input costs are dollarized. So the growers, you know, both places face the same region. I don't know what to tell you to do because I don't personally, you know, I'm a contrarian most of the time in my life. So when everything looks the bleakest, I always want to take the most optimistic outlook and say, hey, let's go study why things should turn around. So, but right now with China, you know, but in the previous times when we kind of been able to take that outlook, we had Chinese prices, you know, at a large premium to international prices. We didn't have them hovering right at the same level we are. So that, you know, is it, you know, whether, well, and you can't, and, you know, one thing you learn about Chinese policy is whatever is said today can change tomorrow. So you can't take any confidence in something that comes out, you know, in a month from now. It comes out, this is what the reserve is going to do. Well, if they don't sell the cotton and they don't do this, they'll change it tomorrow. So I, in that atmosphere, you know, cotton really faces, you know, struggles. That in, and I don't know, you know, the grower's going to have to do his own calculation. I don't know the sums between that and soybeans at the current prices and other ones, but it's going to be a it's going to be a tough period. And it, you know, not to say the prices can't rally or recover, but it, you know, we've got to market the world market, every commodity price scheme in the world that engineered where you pay prices way above the market, you accumulate stocks, never ends well. And unfortunately, we've arrived at that moment to where, after, you know, being able to ignore it for 3 or 4 years, we're at the moment where the Chinese reserve scheme is on top of us, and it's a lot of cotton. And, you know, for a while I was under the impression that, you know, because its quality is so poor, it won't impact. Well, I mean, over the last year to 2 years, it seems to me, since we've been involved much more in the physical business, I've come to realize, you know, price seems to change everything. Everybody can complain all they want that I don't want this type of cotton, I don't want that, but you lower the price several cents and everybody seems to use it. So that worries, makes me worry about the reserve. Is there some, you know, if they discount it enough and so forth, will they actually, you know, begin to move into markets? And so I think we got a dilemma, and I'm a free market person, so I find myself almost like screaming like Donald Trump about some of this, but it is like, for right now, the only hope we got of getting some clarification of this is if there was some action in WTO to make China have to say positively beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's going to be isolated from the market and have to be used domestically.
And what are the possibilities, given what the Chinese did in the 80s when they accumulated those huge stocks and finally wound up just exporting it? And under this scenario, nobody wants to take the loss. You know, none of the provinces or the central government, or particularly the people holding the stocks, and I think that would be the NDRC or maybe the CNCRC. I'm not sure which one of them actually are responsible for the storage costs. But in your mind, what's the possibility of them actually throwing in the towel finally and exporting a part of this discounted heavily just to kind of get it off the market? Sometimes taking the first loss and, you know, getting on with it is the best way to go about it. Well, what kind of odds do you give of them actually going back to that policy?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I mean, mm-hmm. I was my first real dealings with China was right as they began to open up, and because we had a joint venture my company did with the National Cotton Reserve Corp. So I'm a little familiar with their actions and thought processes and so forth, and I think you can't rule anything out because, I mean, you know, we all remember back China exported, the last time they really exported, they exported about 700,000 barrels. In the previous season, they exported about 1.6, and we went through a period of time there where, you know, one day we got the China National Reserve Corp export tender number 999 for 3 million tons, you know, and then the next 2 weeks later it was canceled, and off and on she went. And so I think the threat of exports is for real. I think that right now the only hope of that not occurring is related to WTO, and if China feels the threat that will move them in, you know, as I mentioned, the WTO falls in three areas, and when you go to export, you know, I think you're allowed under the domestic green box and so forth, you're allowed to spend about as much money as you want as long as you is only meant in the effect in the domestic market. But if you go to the export, if that subsidy is a whole different ball game, and so I cannot, you know, the one area tells me that they're not going to allow it to be exported because that is, and I'm no genius, but I do, you know, I don't, certainly the spirit of the law is violated, that our WTO, China's violated WTO, and there's a lot of actions that everybody can take to enforce them, to make them stop exporting. But now the problem is it takes 2 or 3 years of WTO court action before that happens, and the farmer's dead and buried. So I don't know, but that's the one thing, that the only thing that gives me some hope they won't. Otherwise, the way the Chinese domestic forward markets are acting, the threat of exports is for real, because otherwise their prices have certainly moved aggressively lower in the forwards, which is some unusual.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. We're looking at questions because we have had questions coming in. I think most of these questions have been answered, and so Ed, you've done an outstanding job. I do know this is a question everybody wants to know is, okay, so what does this mean for prices, for our prices? What does this mean for the board? And so I would open that up, and OA, let me go to you first, and then we'll work through everybody. How low can we go in old crop and new crop? And how high can we go on a bounce? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, let me, since Gerald's on the plane, I'll call on him to answer on my behalf. It's not available, but, last month, I certainly indicated that I was having problems with this market, and I didn't understand it. And we kept getting these bullish reports, and the market went lower. And I mentioned the old adage that I was having trouble putting together this year, but adages are adages for a reason, and that is short crops have long tails. I did not see at that time this tail getting lower and lower. I just thought this market was going to be flat, but now comes the issue of China moving those stocks, and I also have given credit to USDA and the WASDA staff for maintaining those stocks on the book. I know that there had been pressure that to just disappear those Chinese stocks and say they didn't exist because of the low quality. And Ed and Kip have both pointed out, well, at give me a price and we can move those things. And now we're getting down to a price low enough where those things are going to move. So what does it tell us with respect to U.S.? Well, to me, it tells us that New York is looking at 55 cents, possibly even lower. And 55 cents, because that's the next nickel drop from 60 cents. I'm very concerned that we go lower, but I'm holding off now at around 55 cents because I think we'll get some movement and we'll get close enough, I think, to begin challenging some of the polyester mixes, even though polyester is, what, 48, 45 cents. So I'm looking at New York, the nearby contract months until we can get some resolution with the Chinese situation down around 55 cents.
Okay, this is probably even a tougher question. What kind of a bounce do you think we might be able to see?
The bounces, I think, are going to be very small. I think we may get back up to maybe 61 cents or something like that in old crop contract prices. New crop is so difficult to call right now because of this and because of the intense interest in growers in the United States wanting to increase acreage, one, the Mid-South looking for an alternative to corn and soybeans, B, the Texans coming back from last year's floods, as well as the very low milo prices, leaving them without an option. But yesterday I was talking to a grower in the Mid-South. He said, you know, I think I'm going to switch and plant some milo. So I think what they were telling me is, well, I wanted to plant cotton. I can't make it on cotton. At least if I plant some milo or if I plant some soybeans, I'm not going to make any money, but I'm not going to lose any money. So I see a problem with new crop cotton. We're not going to have the acreage that we anticipated. I know the going numbers, 9.1 million acres. And in January, I saw it going higher because there's so much interest. But now I'm down at 8.8 million acres simply because these prices. And I'm not sure outside of weather conditions that's low enough to push any prices higher. And we get some weather conditions with an 8.9 million bale crop, then yes, we can take this market higher. But again, given the Chinese situation, very low 60s. No new crop.
Okay. John, what are your thoughts?
Well, I agree with OA that, okay, so we got to push the range of the bottom down, and yeah, I would just push it down into the mid-50s. I'm actually reminded of a research study that a colleague did about what would happen if the Chinese did what they said they wanted to do this summer and use 10% of that inventory, and the price effect of that was a whole lot bigger. But I'll just say lower mid-50s on the low end old crop. And I'm puzzling the same way OA was about the new crop acreage, and you know, whether it's 9.1 or under 9 or a little higher. Yeah, I hear stories. I was in the polar regions, that is to say above the Canadian River in the Texas Panhandle. Those grain farmers are talking like they're going to expand cotton, which really surprised me. I think there's going to be more cotton acres in Texas than just replacing the prevented plantings from last year, which I think was underlying the council's numbers. I think we're going to be a little higher than the council's number right now from additions in Texas. But so what? You know, if it's 9.3, that's still a low planted acreage, relatively speaking. It's still a setup for a little bit of weather markets if something bad happens in the summer on a 9.1 or a 9.3 or an 8.9. So to get around to answering the question, I think you could see December futures, if there was a problem this summer, you could see December futures over 65. But a bunch of things have to line up. On the other hand, if we still have El Nino moisture starting off, and if we make 2 bales to the acre dry land the way we did, you know, twice a decade, we did it in 2007, and we came close to it in 2010. If we do that, we'll be weighing on things pretty heavily for the new crop situation. So, I don't know, 55 to 65 would be my answer.
Okay, Kip.
I'm going to kind of echo what everyone said. I'm thinking that the current crop, though, I'm thinking more in terms now of a low 50s kind of level. I think the function of the market now is to take prices to whatever level it takes to get mill interest. And because the alternative fibers are so incredibly cheap, and we have this overhang of cotton in the world, of the surplus of supply, the mills may be a little bit more reluctant to jump in here. They're going to wait to see the bottom before they decide to come in and buy, at least aggressively, I think.
Okay.
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying at the front end, I think the market should get in the low 50s. The highs on that, I tend to agree, 60, maybe 63 cents, but it's short-lived. If you can get there, I think, you know, people ought to take advantage of that as a sale. In the new crop, we're in a scenario where I think our numbers are a little bit bigger. To John's point, we had all the cotton that's prevent planted before put in, and we think that that's probably good. We are hearing stories that folks want to expand acreage for cotton. However, financing, I think, is still getting to be a problem. When you look at cotton relative to other row crops in the U.S., it's more difficult to get financing for cotton. So the high end, who knows? We could, if you get a crop problem, we could take it to high 60s, low 70s. But again, that's going to be short-lived if it occurs.
Okay. Ed, I've got a couple of questions here, and you touched somewhat on this, but I'd like to ask you, before we ask your thoughts on prices, here's one. Ask how all of this affects the premium quality markets, and you did touch on this, in relationship to average and below quality. I know last year we got a bump up in the basis there late that seemed to help things. Is that what it's going to take with these lower prices, a good bump up in basis levels to get farmers to plant more or plant?
Well, now a little bit on basis is that, you know, last year the premium market was a really hot market, and you had the using the CFR, the, you know, the landed price in Asia as kind of the reference. You know, we got the basis for a Memphis territory, you know, extremely long staple, 37-38 staple, strict middling, two leaf. You know, it got up to 2,000 on, which they took a lot of market from market share. It took a lot of market share from Australian, because Australian basis was 3,000 on. But one of the things that's happened in the premium market is, I've been dealing a lot in Australian cotton, It is that the Australians price themselves, well, a couple things. I'll back up to give you some reference for this. Well, one, you know, 2 years ago, we had mills in China saying, you know, they were all rushing around, how can they can source Australian cotton, how can they get their hands on Australian cotton, and we're saying, I'll pay anything. You know, they didn't say exactly these words, but the equivalent of, I'll pay whatever because I got to have it. My consumer's demanding it. Okay. Now, fast forward to today, Australian basis has collapsed. It peaked last March. The FOB basis in Australia got up to as much as almost $2,000 on, and today it's $500 on. Australians priced themselves out of the market. And the second thing that why this is important today is that in my search for what happened to the Australian demand, I come to a couple things. One is the textile and the cotton textile supply chain, everyone should remember, is very segmented. And why that's important to everything is you go from the mill to the merchant, and the merchant to the spinner, and then the spinner to the weaver knitter, and the weaver knitter to the dyer, and the dyer to the cut and sew, and the cut and sew to the brand or retailer. What that means is everybody in that supply chain has no incentive to pay up for anything, because their ability to make money is their ability to buy their raw material low, sell it with a higher margin after processing, and make some money. Now, to me, I wouldn't want to be in the business in the middle of that because I don't see it sustainable. But the bottom line is that means nobody wants to pay. Nobody really will pay a premium unless they're forced to, or unless the brand or retailer at the end says, I got to have this product, pay it, and I'll pay it, transfer it on to you. Well, the Australian situation, when their basis got up so high last year, illustrates that if the consumer, brand or retailer being, not the consumer, the brand or retailer, does not specify and willing to pay for that higher premium, the spinner down the road will substitute and spread out the higher used cotton. And so we have that's one thing. Cause so the markets, the textile market today, worse than it was any other time, is very price sensitive because of what I just told you. Second thing is the high-end market, the market that's, you know, you can go to your own apparel stores, you can go to anywhere, and that market is really come under pressure. And it's come under pressure because of this, you know, blast of fast fashion. That is the, you know, traditionally, if you go into a mill today, they're showing you a catalog of what their fabric's going to look like for 2000. I was in a mill the other day, and we were looking at some things, and they're talking about the 2017 consumer market. Well, the fast fashion is talking about what's going to happen 3 to 6 months from now, and they'll change dramatically. What has happened is that the consumer under the fast fashion now, or the millennials, is going and buying a garment that is lower quality, shorter lifespan, and based more on price. So that has really damaged the premium market for cotton. So today, I don't want to give any false hopes. How much premium? You will get a premium for it, but you're going to get it within the reference of what the market is. So today, you look at the 2016 Australian crop is being offered, and the Australian crop, you know, they have some unusual things happen in weather. But assuming nothing happens in weather, you're talking about a crop that's going to be inch and 5/32 all the way out to, you know, inch and a quarter in length, and that's going to be a Midland, strict Midland, and better. It's going to be a two leaf. It's going to have a 31, 32, 33 GPT, and that, you know, is what people are expecting. And the middling, in that quote is right now is about, you know, 1,600 on, 1,700 on May futures. So unlike last season when, you know, it was 3,000 on and you could get a Memphis Territory, you know, high grade could get 2,000 on in Asia. And I mean, all these quotes are talking about landing the price in Asia. Well, this year is, when you got Australian offered at that, U.S. High grades like that is going to go at a 200 or 300 point discount. So, even though we got record tight stocks of the machine picked high grades, I think the premium you're going to get for quality until that changes. Now amazed at how weak the Australian basis has been. Now that can all change. If that changes, you'll get a premium. If that doesn't change, that's your reference point. So as of today, yes, you'll get a premium for better quality, but how much a premium you're going to get is, are you, if you get a rare moment where a merchant or somebody's squeezed and needs to pay up to meet a demand, you'll get it that way. But on the true transparent market, until the Australian basis improves, it won't happen here.
Okay. What are your thoughts on prices?
Listen, I mean, I wish I knew what price is going to do. I feel like a fool because a couple of months ago I said that, you know, that new crop could rally 10 cents because I thought the cost was so far below the production in Australia, Brazil, and the U.S., and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, back in December when I got bearish, I had to eat all those words. So, you know, I don't know. The other gentleman presented some valid prices, and, you know, world stocks outside of China have gotten tighter. The USDA report changed that somewhat yesterday when they raised, but I still argue with the USDA. I think that, you know, anybody's consumption number in China is a guess, and personally, I think the Indian consumption is a little bit more solid than, you know, other people, and I think the Indian crop is about 1 million bales below the USDA, and so based on that, world stocks outside of China are going to be the tightest they've been since the great run-up in prices. So that gives you some, you know, hope to hang on to. If it wasn't for the Chinese, I would think prices could rally up into the, you know, the high 60s. But right now, I mean, I have to just say I'm floating as the time goes, and it's based on what the Chinese do. And when the Chinese forward prices at the same level as international prices, it scares me very dramatically. And I'm gonna move my price forecast just constantly with the market. And gonna recommend, you know, and you got to play defense on this moment in time. So if you do get a rally where you can lock in, you know, based on your yield projections and quality you expect and blah, you know, XXX, if you can lock in at break even and so forth, it's one of those years where you got to do it. Because I think there's so much uncertainty tied to the Chinese stock situation. It is going to be, if you can make it through, if the cotton farmer can make it through the liquidation of Chinese stocks, then he'll have a home run for a while because the world will be a different spot, and you'll return to economics again. But until that happens, you just got to battle through this.
Okay. Well,
Pat, if I may, it's close with the Senate there. You know, I want to hit hard. And then it will return to economics. In other words, we're not dealing with so much. While we are dealing with supply demand, we're dealing with China's supply now.
Artificial supply.
And to everyone's credit that kept telling me this market, this cotton would be available, I just made the assumption it would not be available at any decent price. And it's not. And all of a sudden, people will pay for it now. And consequently, that's what we're going to work on until that cotton is gone, and then the what we would say the normal economics will return. So we're outside the lines entirely. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, that's fine. Any other thoughts from anyone?
Before you go again,
you know, Pat,
I'm going to interrupt.
I'm sorry, OA. I was just going to say, and then I'll certainly hush. I've talked enough. But I just want to, you know, from a grower standpoint, here's something just to, you know, give you some glimmer of hope when the real economics return. China's, now this may change when they get access to certain seeds and da-da-da-da-da. But today, this is something I thought would occur, has been occurring in China, is that China cannot grow cotton economically. There's no reason why. I mean, China's already ended the subsidy for most part in eastern China and areas that's grown cotton. Since China's been in existence, they're disappearing. So once this all leaves, China's cotton production is going to continue to fall, because their average cost of production is about $1 to $1.10 at the least, if true, all the subsidies were taken out. So that's one encouraging thing for the world cotton market long term.
One thing, too, though, even when we get back to what we consider cotton economics, we've got this alternative fiber problem out here that's not going to go away for a long, long time. And so we can't divorce the cotton economics from the alternative fibers. Cotton's been losing share for years. I don't know how that's going to change unless we can get the consumer, and Ed touched on this earlier, unless we can get the consumer to decide to go back to cotton. That price relationship is at the textile level, and the consumers, I think, love cotton products. We've just got to get that price relationship to the point where the textile mills will produce more products that are made out of cotton or have a higher percentage of cotton.
Thing on that, Kip is very much right. I don't think it's a matter, you know, since we deal now all the way downstream on some of this with the brand and retailers in Europe on some products, I'm telling you right now, it's not a matter, you know, it's a matter of price when you're dealing with a spinner who's a you know, segmented chain that I mentioned to you on the supply chain, but it's really a matter of the consumer preference. You know, that's the thing the cotton market needs to deal with, and really, I mean, make an aggressive leadership from the U.S. and join, get other nations to join in, is to promote and come up scientifically with ways that cotton competes in areas where traditionally it has not competed.
Well, that's a good point. With that, we want to conclude our meeting for today. We want to remind people that
Sorry, there was one thing.
That's fine.
And because it's positive for growers, at least it's something positive. Spoke with a merchant yesterday who wanted to remind me to make sure that I understood that right now, in the Mid-South anyway, growers can get an equity of 11 to 12 cents a pound. Now, 11 to 12 cents a pound comes out to about 63 cents without any premiums. Assuming we got premiums of, say, 300 points, so all of a sudden, growers in the Mid-South can book, if this merchant is correct, and I don't disbelieve it, 65, 66 cents for the 2016 crop. Now, I would not recommend that any grower plant cotton without booking at that level. If you can't get it, I'm sure it's only going to be a certain amount of acreage they're going to take at that level, or a certain amount of bales. But if you can go ahead and get that, get it and plant if you want to plant cotton. If you can't get it, it's going to be tough to plant cotton. It's going to be awfully tough. And I'm the guy that wants cotton planted. So, Pat, I'll shut up with that.
No, that's fine. Thank you. Well, any other comments out there? All right. Well, let's wrap it up. We'll have this posted on our website shortly, our broadcast today, also on Facebook and Twitter. We want to thank Bayer Crop Science for being our sponsor. Special thanks to OA Cleveland and to Ed Jernigan, an outstanding job, very, very timely, and did a superb job of explaining what's going on in the cotton world today. Thanks to the rest of our panel and to our listeners for joining us, and that concludes this edition of the Ag Market Network. Thank you.